Welcome into the Bonanza After Party. Happy to have you alongside. I'm Nicholas Hodel. Nick Keneally is alongside me as always. A few more topics to discuss as an extension to our show on Sunday we did not get to mention. And we did not get to mention just how awful the Pac-12 has been over the course of the last few weeks. I mean, several results that you can just really just point at and just be like, uh-oh, there's trouble about. And I mean, you get this many box scores that show it, that just shows you how much in trouble this conference continues to find itself in. And it really starts off with the two worst teams in the conference, Oregon State and Cal. Cal losing to Southern at home, just putting an exclamation point on the SWAC's, dare I say, really good year over the Pac-12. 4-4 the SWAC is against the Pac-12. That is awful. And those do include three home games at the Pac-12 in the SWAC Legacy Series, a part of that. But for Cal to lose to Southern by 8, I was talking with one of my dear friends, Mr. Ray Bell Corrier this week, and he's got some family members that have been season ticket members for about 50 years, and all the tickets now, they're on digital, everything's digital. And they used to have all these ticket booklets, and they had to contact him and ask when the first basketball game was. And that's just the kind of, just the lack of caring that's going on right now in California men's basketball. And what they've done the last few weeks has not really helped in that department.
I mean, yeah, you let Southern put up 74 points on you, and when in yourself you're being an inefficient offensive team, really, it's an embarrassment, really, to all of college basketball, to the Pac-12, which as a whole is having struggles. But I mean, this type of loss is a tough one, really. I mean, because you saw Southern go head to head with perhaps one of the upper teams in the conference, U of A, and U of A absolutely handled Southern by about 40. Had all of the momentum in that, and then just seeing how Cal on the exact opposite spectrum of the Pac-12 does, it says a lot about the difference in skill level.
Yeah, and there's a few individuals for Cal who had a good performance here. Devin Eskew in particular, 21 points and 5 assists. Really good night for him, though he did turn the ball over 7 times. That is a big issue, but you're right. I mean, the Arizona game, I mean, just look at that compared to this. It tells you the gap between the best of the best in the Pac-12 and the absolute worst is a huge gap. And that's not good. I mean, you're going to find that teams that are around 4 through 6 in this conference who could try to get a postseason opportunity at the end of the year, they could take loss to the teams like Cal, and this conference could start eating itself alive and eating its own bids away for NCAA tournament and even the NIT to that extent. But it's a really bad result. And a lot of credit goes to the SWAC. I mean, that is an absolutely really good performance from the conference against the Pac-12. And it's the reason why high major conferences just don't want to take their chances and travel if they don't have to, because, and this is a home game for the Pac-12. I mean, this is a home game. So it really just shows you just what can happen when you give mid-majors a huge opportunity. Washington did not help themselves at home against Cal Baptist earlier this past week, a 73-64 loss to Cal Baptist that resulted from Cal Baptist shooting over 50% from the floor. Cal Baptist had a lead as large as 12. Washington's largest lead in this game did come early on this game. 8 points, 18:44 left in the first. Other than that, it was just either Cal Baptist leading or just a really close game for the rest of the way, and it's certainly not an ideal result for a Washington team that was really trying to find its way, maybe get into some kind of postseason this year, whether it is the NIT or something else. But this tournament just does not help.
I mean, just in this game, Washington shot bad. Yes, they did put up 64 points, but it was not a pretty 64 points. This team just, they didn't show a lot. They were way less efficient than this Cal Baptist team. I mean, Baptist shot, they shot the absolute lights out of the Huskies.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously shooting is a good recipe for good upsets, but you never want to have that come against you there. Utah at home losing to Sam Houston by 10, and not even a shooting case this time. Sam Houston actually shot less Less good. That's a horrible way to phrase it. But Utah shot a better percentage than Sam Houston in this particular game. But once again, just the largest lead coming way too early for Utah. And that largest lead was 1 point. Utah led for about 25 seconds, and that was it. Sam Houston led for nearly 39 minutes. Certainly not a game you want if you're Utah. Again, another team, maybe a little bit more on the bottom than Washington, but you're just trying to fight your way through, trying to get a positive season out of this. This is not a good way to do that.
I mean, this team got absolutely out-rebounded by Sam Houston, out-rebounded by 10, also clocked 16 turnovers, which in that double-digit loss, that really goes to show just the struggles that they had against the Sam Houston team.
Yeah, that is certainly the case there. And I mean, Sam Houston, again, they're not a terrible team in the Western Athletic Conference, but if you're Utah, you want to win those games at home. Oregon State, also one of the worst teams in the Pac-12. They're losing to an in-state school, Portland State, 79-66. This was a game that Portland State really took advantage of, and it was a 13-point win for Portland State. That was their largest lead of the entire night. And again, just a really bad loss for Oregon State. Oregon State and Cal are really separating themselves from the rest of the conference, but not in a good way here.
No, and you mentioned that 13-point loss to Portland State, and they also shot 13 threes in that entire game and made two. 2 for 13 from three for them, 18 turnovers, so they're 18 assists, eight team assists as a group. That's just a terrible ratio that you can't put up those types of numbers and expect to win. They just absolutely embarrass themselves against another in-state school, and they're just sinking the bottom of this conference.
Yeah, they certainly are. How about Washington State, a program that was really trying to get themselves in a good position perhaps later on down the line with a decent Pac-12 conference season? That's been out the door. This was the third of the SWAC trifecta at home against the Pac-12, and Prairie View, they really took it to Washington State. Washington State also did not have a lead here, 70-59. Prairie View with a win, a pretty convincing win at that. Prairie View had a lead as large as 21 points at one point. Not a good game at all for Wazoo. They got to learn a lot because this is a disaster for them.
I mean, yeah, just shot absolutely terribly in this game. Another bad assist to turnover ratio, 6 assists to their 15 turnovers, shot 14 of 43 from the field. It's just terribly inefficient offense, and that's what you're seeing from a lot of these teams like Cal and Oregon State. It's bad offense, and then you're letting these teams drop 65, 70, 75 points on you. You can't have inefficient offense and then let the other team shoot 40% from three. You just can't do that. You have to find some sort of balance, whether it's with a strong offense or strong defense. And it looks like a good half of this Pac-12 is showing neither of those.
Yeah, it's a big problem. And a couple other teams lost opposition. Well, one of them, Stanford, losing to San Diego State. I mean, you certainly can't fault that. San Diego State's a really good team. But at home, you wish you could have gotten that. Stanford did not lead the entire way at all. So, again, it's a major problem there for Stanford. But San Diego State probably expected to win that game, and they did pretty convincingly there. USC also had some troubles with Vermont. I was watching this game very intently. Vermont, it looked like that they might have been looking like they're going to win that game, but USC pulled it out of the end, a low-scoring game, 59-57. But the fact we had to do that rapid fire for a conference is a big issue, Nick. Once again, it seems like it's an annual issue for the Pac-12, in which the conference, they just cannot get in their own way. They get in their own way in non-conference slate. They take these bad losses. The bottom half of the conference continues to get worse. And there are a couple of teams in UCLA and Arizona that are really good and really should not find the pitfalls. The problem is we're going to try to get a good amount of bids, trying to really sustain ourselves as a power conference. The problem becomes when this happens, and then those third and fourth place, fifth place teams take those bad losses on an off-night in conference slate. They lose those games, and surprise! You're a power conference that has a third of your team or 25% of your team to the NCAA tournament. This is not good for a power conference, period. End of story. As a power conference, you should be striving for at least 40%, and that is 5. Couldn't tell you the last time they got 5 teams in convincingly. Couldn't tell you that. It's an embarrassment. When USC and UCLA lead the Pac-12, it's going to be ugly because this will continue. And without UCLA, at least, and definitely not USC because they're actually a decent team that probably be fighting for the bubble, perhaps, if they fill out a good Pac-12 slate, you're looking at a Pac-10 if you don't add anyone that becomes a near-major conference. You would lose power conference status in men's basketball. Be very careful, Pac-12. You're once again setting yourself up on a road to failure. And it ain't going to be pretty because we'll be talking about this all season long. And trust me, it ain't going to be pretty because even though we are the Arizona State student-run radio station here at Blaze Radio, I can assure you this, we will pull absolutely no punches when it comes to conferences not doing themselves any favors. And once again, the Pac-12, it is not looking good for the conference. Let's go to TCU, another program that is just not looking good. They finally got a convincing win, a 35-point win against UM Monroe. Congratulations! You did what you're supposed to do, finally! But before that, you lost to Northwestern State at home! We talked a little bit last week on how TCU, their continual struggles against inferior opposition, was going to come back to haunt them at some point with a loss. It finally happened against Northwestern State, and big credit to Northwestern State. They only left for about 10 minutes of this game. Jamonta Black, in particular, of 25 points. He had a great game shooting from deep. And once again, three-point shooting. 2-21 for TCU. It seems like this is a common thing for TCU and against UM Monroe. By the way, both games without Mike Miles Jr., TCU against UM Monroe, shot 50%, and they won by 35 points. See what happens when you shoot the three ball, TCU? Well, see what happens? You win games against teams you should be winning convincingly. You do that. But when you don't, sorry, you lose games like that. And I mean, these first 2 weeks for TCU have been absolutely brutal.
I mean, yeah, and you look at that loss against Northwestern State, and look, just their terrible shooting. You mentioned that 2-for-21 shooting. Chuck O'Bannon, who is your team's the stretch of your floor, he gives you that spacing. He shot 1-for-7 from the three. He shot 3-for-14 from the floor. He is who you're relying on to get that type of rhythm from beyond the arc going, and he wasn't really able to get that going in himself. I mean, Emmanuel Miller, he's also a player that you kind of depend on for scoring sometimes. He put up 6 points. It's just top to bottom. It was just a really poor performance from them. It's not like they rebounding terrible. They out-rebounded Northwestern State. They didn't get as many turnovers. They got some good assists, but it just all boils down to the efficiency. They shot with volume, but those shots just weren't falling.
Yeah, and you compare the games. I mean, it is all about shooting. I mean, that's it. That is all it is about. I mean, TCU against Northwestern State won the second chance battle, won the bench battle 26-6. Won the fast break battle, won the points in the paint battle, won the points off turnovers battle. They won just about every specialty stat you can think of, but they failed to win the game because their shooting is so god-awful. We could shoot better from three. Literally, we could do better than 2-of-21 if you gave us a chance as a combined duo. That is awful. And you combine that with the close shade against Arkansas Pine Bluff. And against the Marv, they were all right. I mean, it wasn't convincing, but it was... They won, at least, but this is just, oh my gosh. This is going to come back to bite them in a big-time fashion, Nick, because, I mean, just looking at where TCU had Northwestern State, this was a 12-point game, now 12:54 left in the second half, and then it was single digits pretty much after the 12-minute mark and the rest of the way. Late in this game, Northwestern State didn't take the lead until about 2:50 left, so... This is the way that second half went down against Northwestern State. It was one made free throw for Northwestern State with about 2:50 to go. That gave them the lead initially after a three-pointer with 3:33 left in the game. A layup for TC with 2:24 left. A jumper from Northwestern State to Marcus Short with 1:14 left, and that was it. That was it. I mean, there was just no offense late in the game, and that is usually a sign of disaster for somebody. And it ended up being TCU.
I mean, just not able to capitalize on those types of looks. I mean, just a lot of bad missed jumpers, especially going down the stretch. that's when you need to kick it into high gear, and the Horned Frogs just weren't able to do that. I mean, you talk about that 2-for-21 from three, how either of us would be able to do it. I'll walk on over to the Sun Devil Fitness Center here at the ASU campus and shoot 21 threes. And I can almost assure you, if I replicate that shot chart from beyond the arc, I would probably be able to knock down more threes from TCU. Noted, I probably won't have 6'7" people jumping at me, but, you know, I could still hit those threes.
I mean, how would you do it in an intramural game if you were playing? How would you do that if you had 21 threes to take?
Probably make at least 9.
Really? You're giving yourself a lot of confidence there.
That's all I do is shoot and play defense.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's a big problem for TCU, and there was so much talk over Feast Week in the studio from ESPN, the studio analysts, about how these games matter in November. Asked Dayton about that last year. TCU, they're still a good basketball team. Getting into the tournament should not be a problem for them. But that's a loss that takes you down about 2 seed lines, in my estimation. I mean, it's bad. It is bad, and they got a few months to figure it out before it's going to cost them. The Emerald Coast class, I mean, it's not the greatest field. I mean, Cal's in there. I mean, but if you don't shoot, TCU, you're not winning the Emerald Coast Classic. You're going to get a bad loss there, too. It's just a consistent theme, and it's quite frankly embarrassing at this point if you're TCU. It's really, really, really bad. And I mean, I can't stress that enough. I mean, they've gone down about 40 spots in KenPom now, from like 16 to like not even the top 50 anymore. I mean, it's coming back to bite them in a real serious manner. And maybe the UL Monroe gave us a sign that they finally turned it around. But if you got to rely on shooting, that's not a good throw you have to rely on. They're without Mike Miles in the last couple games. But even then, you get him back, it's still the same formula. You still got to shoot the ball. It is still the same thing. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, if you're having a lie on a good shooting night and you're not a decent shooting team, you got to have all the time in the world. You're going to disappoint every time.
Yeah, I mean, they have some time to prepare for their Friday game against Cal. But, I mean, just looking at their schedule, they have games against Providence, Utah. Like, it's going to be a rough, rough stretch for TCU if they can't get this shooting going. And you mentioned if that UL Monroe game is a sign of the times, maybe they can turn that around. They'll have a better time against these teams, but just shooting how they have been on average this season, they have no merit in that.
Yeah, it's gonna continue to end up being a disaster for this team. And whew, boy, it is just so rough to have to try to manage that. But I mean, they gotta try something. Man, if they don't try something, they're going to be in big trouble, and certainly not something I would wish on anybody, but I mean, it's just not looking as bright as it did a couple of weeks ago. Let's talk about Texas A&M a little bit here. We touched on the Aggies a little bit on Sunday, but we're going to really get into a deep dive of this team and took a couple of what's going to end up being some bad losses on a neutral court. First to Murray State, been to Colorado before, eking out of 7th place in the Myrtle Beach Invitational, a 67-51 win over Loyola Chicago. But against Murray State, the Aggies, that 88-79 performance, Murray State 50%, had at least 4 players with 12 points and 3 players with at least 17 points. That's a great balance for a Murray State team that's not what it used to be, for sure. I mean, they got a rough go at it in Missouri Valley, but they got a really solid win to add to their resume. A&M had a couple of key pieces off the bench, and Julius Marble and Manny Opaseki performed well for the Aggies, but again, the starters here were the big problem. Dexter Dennis only had 5 points. Henry Coleman III only had 2 points. Solomon Washington had 8. Tyrese Radford had 19, but over half those points came from the free throw line. A lot of different issues here, and to add things up, A&M did not lead it for a single moment in this particular game. I mean, they won some battles, 40-28 in the paint, 18-4 on second chance. That's actually a really good sign for A&M to get that in such big way. And then with Marble and Obaseki headlining the bench, it was a 29-10 performance for A&M off the bench. But Murray State beat them in the fast break, 24-15. Murray State, it's just one of those deals where you can find a lot of different things for A&M. And A&M had 20 offensive rebounds in this game as well. Still lost it. It's a very interesting sign for A&M. This was not a good start for the Aggies in Myrtle Beach.
No, like just that first loss against Murray State really set them on a bad path. Obviously, you had your loss to Colorado where you give up 103 points in two halves. And it's just it all rooted down to that game against Murray State. I mean, shooting inefficiently from behind the arc. You shot 27 threes, only make 6. Right? And it's from within the arc too, putting up 71 shots. That type of volume you'd expect to win a game, but they just weren't really able to get much going. Sure, they rebounded the ball with decent efficiency, but it's just they had so many issues. They really couldn't guard Murray State and kept sending Murray State to the line. That's really what boiled it down to in that game. And then their bad luck just kept going. Colorado was extremely efficient. That really tells you a lot about how good or bad Texas A&M is good at defending perhaps the perimeter, the field in general, but the perimeter shooting for the other teams has just been off the charts.
Yeah, and against Murray State, both teams caught fire in the second half. And when you catch fire and an opponent catch fire, chances are it's just going to be an ugly way to end the night if that is indeed the case. And it certainly was, and it's not good for that A&M team. You mentioned the Colorado game. Colorado's the weirdest team in the country.
They confuse me.
They
so
are the
much.
Weirdest team in the country because this came off a loss to eventual Myrtle Beach Invitational champion UMass, which didn't have that in my Feast Week bingo card. But Colorado in this game shot 57.6%. You mentioned the perennial shooting defensive troubles for A&M. I mean, at halftime it was 54-33 Colorado. I mean, it's just one of the things where it's like, what in the world is happening here? I mean, KJ Simpson, credit to him with 30 points and 7 boards along with 3 assists. 2 other players had at least 14 points, and Nick Clifford added 11 for the Buffaloes. But again, I mean, the volume was very similar for both of these teams. I mean, it comes down to that the whole shooting aspect, and there was not a lot of things that A&M was winning convincingly in this particular game. It's just one of those games for Colorado. Catches fire and that's it. I mean, Tennessee learned that lesson too, where you don't let Colorado catch fire. If you do, that's it. It's ball game. It's just such an interesting team, Colorado, but the conversation for another day. The perimeter shooting troubles kind of speak volume, and they kind of learned from it against Loyola Chicago. Though Loyola Chicago really helped A&M, only shooting 13-24 from the free throw line. But Loyola Chicago is only about 41.7%. 38% from 3, but even then, Loyola Chicago's shooting from first half to second half increased by 10%, and 3-point percentage increased by 35% from half to half. So you certainly have to feel there are some big problems with A&M, even with that particular result, but 1-2 was, I'm sure, not something A&M had in mind. This I can consider to be an absolute disaster for Texas A&M, and for a team that was ranked in convincingly told the country that we don't deserve to be here. This is a disaster, especially for a program that went through as much drama as they did after Selection Sunday last year of pulling out stats that appear about as thick as my box score stack from the week, of being like, this is why we should be in. And then they just almost pull a blank at Myrtle Beach. You could pretty much call it a blank. I mean, Murray State, Colorado, God knows what they're going to be in net this year, but you're talking about quad two. At the highest, I think Murray State end up being quad three. Colorado, who knows where they end up being? I mean, honestly, who knows? I mean, they could be quad two. They could be quad three. But you're looking at two quad three losses. That is a disaster for A&M. And this matters. This absolutely matters.
And you nailed it right on the head with the fact that A&M proved that they don't deserve to be a ranked team. Just some terrible performance throughout the week. Yeah, they got a 16-point win against Loyola Chicago, but it wasn't the best win throughout the whole game. And it's just consistently disappointing. I mean, they didn't shoot the best, as you mentioned, even in their win. But they did get some things going their way, which is really the only thing that sealed off the week. Otherwise, it would have been maybe the most disastrous week since, I don't know, Louisville's start.
Ooh, yeah, that's bad.
That's bad. You can't really top that.
Well, Florida State, too. I mean, that's also bad. Well, that is bad. But I mean, decent start, and they just do this. I mean, you just don't help yourself whatsoever. I mean, it's by far the worst week of any team on the spreadsheet, which, because I had not disclosed it, I have a 25. I have about 10 more, 11 more teams, maybe 12, if I'm feeling a 37 or 38, and then about, like, 6 or 7 more teams to consider for the week. And I am at the worst week of anybody, so, I mean, it's like, what are they doing? I mean, they played their way off my spreadsheet, which is about 45 teams at any given time. They played their way off that.
I mean, just it's such a big list of teams. I mean, what were they at before? Like, they were a decent team going into the week.
Yeah, they were 25 in my ranking going into the week. 25.
So they fell at the very least, like 12 or 13 spots. I mean, disastrous, horrible. There's not enough adjectives to describe how disappointing, mind-boggling of how bad a week A&M had here.
Yeah, it's just an absolute unmitigated disaster for Tennessee. And I feel like we've been seeing that a lot about some programs who have had some really awful weeks to start the season.
It's been a weird start to the season with a lot of these programs. You mentioned Florida State as well as Louisville. Just some programs with high expectations that have really been disappointing. And not just like, oh, they're getting some like ranked teams that they're playing and they're losing. No, they're losing to teams that they shouldn't be losing. Colorado, they've had up and down games. You can't really gauge if you're supposed to lose to that type of team yet because they had that win against Tennessee. But Murray State, they should have really had that win in the quarterfinal of this invitational, and they just came so much short. And it's they have to get it together if they want to make the tournament. I mean, you mentioned their disappointment at the end of last season. They are playing their way down and down, and yes, they have a talented roster, but if they keep disappointing, if they keep shooting sub 10% from the three, forget about a tournament.
A lot of these teams, that's what it boils down to. It really is all about shooting. And for TCU and Texas A&M in particular, it's just pure disasters. It makes both of us shake our head. It makes thousands, if not millions, of fans shake their head across the country. You just gotta do better. I mean,
thankfully for Texas, they do have University of Texas in Houston to kind of soften that blow. But
and Baylor.
And Baylor, of course. But, you know, Texas A&M, Texas Christian University, it's very lopsided in that state.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting to say the least, and I mean, you only hope that this is a blip on the radar for A&M, they can really get things going again. But you mentioned TCU. Now A&M just joining this club of teams that had a lot of high hopes for, but just continue to disappoint, and it just comes apart.
They're really having a Pac-12 week.
Now, when you say that, that's bad.
They're having a Pac-12 week.
Oh, jeez, that is absolutely awful, to say the least. So it's really just to get into some more game picks real quick for some games on Wednesday and Thursday that we know of. I'm as of right now that have been scheduled. Obviously, the Mountain Invitational final and third place game. Can't quite get into that quite yet, but we'll get you those picks on our Twitter at College Bonanza when we have them. A few other games, though, and some big MTEs. Atlantis for Dayton and Wisconsin, and in Portland for a few other games. We both like Dayton over Wisconsin. It's a close matchup, though. I think both these teams have matchups that they want in those spots. I'll be very curious to see what ends up happening with that. Our only disagreement with the four we know of, Alabama and Michigan State. You know, I don't know what it is, man, but I just can't get myself to pick Michigan State right now. Alabama's had an exceptional start to the season as well, and this will be a close game. One possession game type stuff right here. I'd be shocked if it's any more than that. But I like Alabama's pieces, and this is the true litmus test for Michigan State. They played Gonzaga really good. They beat Kentucky. They beat Villanova. Alabama, you got a couple more quality games, I'm for sure. What can Michigan State do in this MTE? I'm going to be very curious to find out. Maybe they finally give you over to the green side as far as picking Michigan State. But for right now, it is a very close call for me, but I got Bama. You're riding with Brule. It's been a hot team over the course of the last several weeks.
And if it was a little bit before, I would have picked Alabama here because they were one of my favorite, not necessarily under the radar, but not one of the top teams in the nation. But I had them, you know, I still have them going pretty far in the tournament. They were one of my favorite teams going in. Still are, but Michigan State has just completely won over my heart. They're just on such a hot streak, really boiling down to that close game against Gonzaga, and they've really just taken off since then. And I'm just loving the way that they're going, and I don't see them slowing down against Bama.
Yeah, we both have Xavier over Florida. Again, that's such a tough call between both of those programs. And Purdue over West Virginia, I think it's a bit of an easier call for both of us. I mean, I don't even know if West Virginia has anybody who can stop Zach Edey. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if anyone has anyone that can stop Zach Edey. I mean, you'll find a few Big Ten teams of guys like Dickinson and Jackson Davis that can do it. But, I mean, Zach Edey, I think, is going to have a monstrous week out in Portland. That should be a really fun guy to watch over the course of the next week. I mean, that's it for our After Party edition of the show. Again, tomorrow is another special edition, our second MTE preview episode, our last one. Again, the Phil Knight tournaments, the Battle for Atlantis, ESPN events. Invitation has some quality teams there too, as well as the Wooden Legacy, Emerald Coast Classic as well. So you have to really stick with us for that. For Nick Keneally, I'm Nicholas Hodel. Have a very good time with whatever you're doing, everyone.